Children of Dune by Frank Herbert, continued, Cassette 3, Side 1. He found himself looking at his own hands, wondering if the dirt would cling. This was Muad'Dib's achievement. He saw the subliminal reservoir of each individual as an unconscious bank of memories going back to the primal cell of our common genesis. Each of us, he said, can measure out his distance from that common origin. Seeing this and telling of it, he made the audacious leap of decision. Muad'Dib set himself the task of integrating genetic memory into ongoing evaluation. Thus did he break through time's veils, making a single thing of the future and the past. That was Muad'Dib's creation, embodied in his son and his daughter. Testament of Arrakis by Hark al-Adda. Faradin strode through the garden compound of his grandfather's royal palace, watching his shadow grow shorter as the son of Seleucus Secundus climbed toward noon. He had to stretch himself a bit to keep step with the tall Bashar who accompanied him.
"I have doubts, Titanic," he said. "Oh, there's no denying the attractions of a throne, but..."
He drew in a deep breath.
"I have so many interests."
Titanic, fresh from a savage argument with Faradin's mother, glanced sidelong at the prince, noting how the lad's flesh was firming as he approached his 18th birthday. There was less and less of Wencisia in him with each passing day, and more of old Shaddam, who had preferred his private pursuits to the responsibilities of royalty. That was what had cost him the throne in the end, of course. He'd grown soft in the ways of command.
"You have to make a choice," Titanic said.
"Oh, doubtless there'll be time for some of your interests, but..."
Faradin chewed his lower lip. Duty held him here, but he felt frustrated. He would far rather have gone to the Rock Enclave where the Sandtrout experiments were being conducted. Now there was a project with enormous potential. Wrest the spice monopoly from the Atreides, and anything might happen.
"You're sure these twins will be eliminated?"
"Nothing absolutely certain, my prince, but the prospects are good."
Faradin shrugged. Assassination remained a fact of royal life. The language was filled with subtle permutations of ways to eliminate important personages. By a single word, one could distinguish between poison in drink or poison in food. He presumed the elimination of the Atreides twins would be accomplished by a poison. It was not a pleasant thought. By all accounts, the twins were a most interesting pair.
"Would we have to move to Arrakis?"
Faradin asked.
"It's the best choice. Put us at the point of greatest pressure."
Faradin appeared to be avoiding some question, and Titanic wondered what it might be.
"I'm troubled, Titanic," Faradin said, speaking as they rounded a hedge corner and approached a fountain surrounded by giant black roses.
Gardeners could be heard snipping beyond the hedges.
"Yes?"
Titanic prompted.
"This, religion which you've professed..."
"Nothing strange about that, my prince,"
Titanic said, and hoped his voice remained firm.
"This religion speaks to the warrior in me. It's a fitting religion for a Sardaukar."
That, at least, was true.
"Yes, but my mother seems so pleased by it."
"Damn Wencisia," he thought. "She's made her son suspicious." "I care not what your mother thinks," Titanic said. "A man's religion is his own affair. Perhaps she sees something in this that may help to put you on the throne."
"That was my thought," Faradin said.
"Ah, this is a sharp lad," Titanic thought.
He said,
"Look into the religion for yourself. You'll see at once why I chose it."
"Still, Muad'Dib's preachings? He was an Atreides, after all."
"I can only say that the ways of God are mysterious," Titanic said.
"I see. Tell me, Tyke, why do you ask me to walk with you just now? It's almost noon, and usually you're off to some place or other at my mother's command this time of day."
Titanic stopped at a stone bench which looked upon the fountain and the giant roses beyond. The splashing water soothed him, and he kept his attention upon it as he spoke.
"My prince, I've done something which your mother may not like."
And he thought,
"If he believes that, her damnable scheme will work."
Titanic almost hoped Wencisia's scheme would fail.
"Bringing that damnable preacher here, she was insane! And the cost!"
As Titanic remained silent, waiting, Faradin asked,
"All right, Tyke, what have you done?"
"I've brought a practitioner of oniromancy,"
Titanic said. Faradin shot a sharp glance at his companion. Some of the older Sardaukar played the dream interpretation game, had done so increasingly since their defeat by that supreme dreamer, Muad'Dib. Somewhere within their dreams, they reasoned, might lay a way back to power and glory. But Tykanek had always eschewed this play.
"This doesn't sound like you, Tyke," Faradin said.
"Then I can only speak from my new religion," he said, addressing the fountain.
To speak of religion was, of course, why they'd risked bringing the preacher here.
"Then speak from this religion," Faradin said.
"As my prince commands."
He turned, looked at this youthful holder of all the dreams which now were distilled into the path which House Carino would follow.
"Church and state, my prince, even scientific reason and faith, and even more, progress and tradition, all of these are reconciled in the teachings of Muad'Dib. He taught that there are no intransigent opposites except in the beliefs of men, and sometimes in their dreams. One discovers the future in the past, and both are part of a whole."
In spite of doubts which he could not dispel, Faradin found himself impressed by these words. He heard a note of reluctant sincerity in Tykanek's voice, as though the man spoke against inner compulsions.
"And that's why you bring me this interpreter of dreams?"
"Yes, my prince. Perhaps your dream penetrates time. You win back your consciousness of your inner being when you recognize the universe as a coherent whole. Your dreams, well..."
"But I spoke idly of my dreams," Faradin protested. "They are a curiosity, no more. I never once suspected that you..."
"My prince, nothing you do can be unimportant."
"That's very flattering, Tyke. Do you really believe this fellow can see into the heart of great mysteries?"
"I do, my prince."
"Then let my mother be displeased."
"You will see him?"
"Of course, since you've brought him to displease my mother."
"Does he mock me?"
Tykanek wondered, and he said,
"I must warn you that the old man wears a mask. It is an Ixion device which enables the sightless to see with their skin."
"He is blind?"
"Yes, my prince."
"Does he know who I am?"
"I told him, my prince."
"Very well. Let us go to him."
"If my prince will wait a moment here, I will bring the man to him."
Faradin looked around the fountain garden, smiled. As good a place as any for this foolishness.
"Have you told him what I dreamed?"
"Only in general terms, my prince. He will ask you for a personal accounting."
"Oh, very well. I'll wait here. Bring the fellow."
Faradin turned his back, heard Tykanek retire in haste. A gardener could be seen working just beyond the hedge, the top of a brown-capped head, the flashing of shears poking above the greenery. The movement was hypnotic.
"This dream business is nonsense," Faradin thought. "It was wrong of Tyke to do this without consulting me. Strange that Tyke should get religion at his age, and now it's dreams."
Presently, he heard footsteps behind him, Tykanek's familiar positive stride, and a more dragging gait. Faradin turned, stared at the approaching dream interpreter. The Ixion mask was a black, gauzy affair which concealed the face from the forehead to below the chin. There were no eye slits in the mask. If one were to believe the Ixion boasts, the entire mask was a single eye. Tykanek stopped 2 paces from Faradin, but the masked old man approached to less than a pace.
"The interpreter of dreams," Tykanek said.
Faradin nodded. The masked old man coughed in a remote grunting fashion, as though trying to bring something up from his stomach. Faradin was acutely conscious of a sour spice smell from the old man. It emanated from the long gray robe which covered his body.
"Is that mask truly a part of your flesh?"
Faradin asked, realizing he was trying to delay the subject of dreams.
"While I wear it,"
the old man said, and his voice carried a bitter twang and just a suggestion of Fremen accent.
"Your dream," he said. "Tell me."
Faradin shrugged.
"Why not?"
That was why Tyke had brought the old man. Or was it? Doubts gripped Faradin, and he asked,
"Are you truly a practitioner of oniromancy?"
"I have come to interpret your dream, puissant lord."
Again Faradin shrugged. This masked figure made him nervous, and he glanced at Tykanek, who remained where he had stopped, arms folded, staring at the fountain.
"Your dream, then," the old man pressed.
Faradin inhaled deeply, began to relate the dream. It became easier to talk as he got fully into it. He told about the water flowing upward in the well, about the worlds which were atoms dancing in his head, about the snake which transformed itself into a sandworm and exploded in a cloud of dust. Telling about the snake, he was surprised to discover, required more effort. A terrible reluctance inhibited him, and this made him angry as he spoke. The old man remained impassive as Faradin at last fell silent. The black gauze mask moved slightly to his breathing. Faradin waited. The silence continued. Presently, Faradin asked, "Aren't you going to interpret my dream?"
"I have interpreted it," he said, his voice seeming to come from a long distance.
"Well?" Faradin heard his own voice squeaking, telling him the tension his dream had produced. Still, the old man remained impassively silent.
"Tell me, then!"
The anger was obvious in his tone.
"I said I'd interpret," the old man said. "I did not agree to tell you my interpretation."
Even Titanic was moved by this, dropping his arms into balled fists at his sides.
"What?"
he grated.
"I did not say I'd reveal my interpretation," the old man said.
"You wish more pay?" Faradin asked.
"I did not ask pay when I was brought here."
A certain cold pride in the response softened Faradin's anger. This was a brave old man, at any rate. He must know death could follow disobedience.
"Allow me, my prince," Titanic said as Faradin started to speak.
Then,
"Will you tell us why you won't reveal your interpretation?" "Yes, my lords. The dream tells me there would be no purpose in explaining these things."
Faradin could not contain himself.
"Are you saying I already know the meaning of my dream?"
"Perhaps you do, my lord, but that is not my gist."
Titanic moved up to stand beside Faradin. Both glared at the old man.
"Explain yourself," Titanic said.
"Indeed,"
Faradin said.
"If I were to speak of this dream, to explore these matters of water and dust, snakes and worms, to analyze the atoms which dance in your head as they do in mine, ah, puissant lord, my words would only confuse you, and you would insist upon misunderstanding."
"Do you fear that your words might anger me?"
Faradin demanded.
"My lord, you're already angry."
"Is it that you don't trust us?" Titanic asked.
"That is very close to the mark, my lord. I do not trust either of you, and for the simple reason that you do not trust yourselves."
"You walk dangerously close to the edge," Titanic said.
"Men have been killed for behavior less abusive than yours."
Faradin nodded, said,
"Don't tempt us to anger."
"The fatal consequences of Corino anger are well known, my lord of Seleucus Secundus," the old man said.
Titanic put a restraining hand on Faradin's arm, asked,
"Are you trying to goad us into killing you?"
Faradin had not thought of that, felt a chill now as he considered what such behavior might mean. Was this old man who called himself Preacher, was he more than he appeared? What might be the consequences of his death? Martyrs could be dangerous creations.
"I doubt that you'll kill me no matter what I say," the preacher said. "I think you know my value, Bashar, and your prince now suspects it." "You absolutely refuse to interpret his dream?"
Titanic asked.
"I have interpreted it." "And you will not reveal what you see in it? Do you blame me, my lord?"
"How can you be valuable to me?"
Faradin asked. The preacher held out his right hand.
"If I but beckon with this hand, Duncan Idaho will come to me, and he will obey me."
"What idle boast is this?"
Faradin asked. But Titanic shook his head, recalling his argument with Wencisia. He said,
"My prince, it could be true. This preacher has many followers on Dune."
"Why didn't you tell me he was from that place?"
Faradin asked. Before Titanic could answer, the preacher addressed Faradin.
"My lord, you must not feel guilty about Arrakis. You are but a product of your times. This is a special pleading which any man may make when his guilts assail him."
"Guilt?"
Faradin was outraged. The preacher only shrugged. Oddly, this shifted Faradin from outrage to amusement. He laughed, throwing his head back, drawing a startled glance from Titanic. Then,
"I like you, preacher."
"This gratifies me, prince," the old man said.
Suppressing a chuckle, Faradin said,
"We'll find you an apartment here in the palace. You will be my official interpreter of dreams, even though you never give me a word of interpretation. And you can advise me about Dune. I have a great curiosity about that place."
"This I cannot do, prince."
An edge of his anger returned. Faradin glared at the black mask,